Welcome back to Ladies with Gumption. We recap DCTV in a flash. I am your intro person, May, and I'm here with
Tatiana
and Jessica.
The episode today, we're on episode 90, so 10 more episodes to go before our big 100. And this episode is called Countdown, where we count down to 100. The premiere of DCTV and the 100, but not the gang from Black Lightning. You can always find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify. We're on Stitcher. We're sometimes on Facebook whenever we remember to post, which has not been for a while. So apologies if you are a Facebook person and we have not been posting there. I will resume doing that when all the shows come back, which is this week. Patreon is still up. And if you would like to support us, phenomenal, fantastic, beautiful. We really appreciate it for everyone who did support us over the summer. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciated it. It paid for our Podomatic upgrade, which is something we really needed because we were running out of space. And for those who are going to continue supporting us, they will receive exclusive content before everybody else. So we'll drop the episode on Patreon first, and then also have exclusive podcasts like we discussed The Boys last week, and we might do like an Elite review. So if you have a show that you think that we should watch and discuss and you would like to join Patreon to listen to it, please let us know. We will also be releasing our showrunner episode that appeared on Patreon over the summer, where we discuss like the importance of showrunners, what they do, and how the showrunners of the DCTV's Arrowverse have impacted the shows themselves. And we did get a question about why we didn't really cover Black Lightning showrunners, and I think we had a reason to do that. I just can't remember what that reason was.
Like, we chose because I had like a list of all the things, but then I think Doom Patrol was still going on at that point, and so I was like, do we include Doom Patrol and Titans and all this kind of stuff? So like, how do we narrow it down? So we just did like the connected universe, which also excluded Black Lightning because it's not connected yet. So we assume it's going to be connected through this crossover. So maybe in the next hiatus, if we do another showrunners for the Arrowverse, that would include Black Lightning, but because it wasn't.
Or we could always do a showrunners. We could always do showrunners for everyone else that we didn't previously do, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
There you go.
And then we can do Black Lightning.
And I feel like the Arrowverse was a little bit easier because they've had so many different ones versus like Black Lightning, where they've had the Akeels the whole time.
Yeah.
So,
that's
true.
You're like, retroactively now, that is
yes,
the reason.
Yes, that is the reason.
That's a new reason. We didn't.
All right, we have
getting, so that's cool.
Yeah, we do have some news. So Matt Reeves' Batman. What was the news for Matt Reeves' Batman?
I feel like there was news, and I feel like there's been news like consistently, so I just left it in there.
We already talked about Jonah Hill, so
yeah.
I don't know.
They're still looking for Catwoman. They haven't cast
back.
Well, there was that bogus tweet about like Lupita Nyong'o and
Tessa Thompson. Oh, right, there was those shortlists.
Yeah, but that was all just like, who are the most famous Black women in Hollywood right now?
Yeah, exactly.
Let me put this together in the list. Yeah, so that was just like not great.
Oh well, apparently no. Just kidding. That's from We Got It Covered. I'm not even gonna bring that up.
Notorious for bad news.
Because Robin rumored for Bat for Matt Reeves. Oh,
Batman. Yes, it was the Nightwing news.
No,
it was like that.
It was
Batgirl.
Batgirl. Apparently, the new movie or whenever they release it, it's going to be in the same universe as the Arbats, like Batman universe. So,
oh, okay, so whatever Batgirl that is.
Yeah.
Yeah. But also, Matt Reeves was going to make a trilogy as well.
Yeah. Going to get a trilogy. And then Batgirl is going to be related in the same universe. So, Barbara Gordon, Jeffrey Wright's daughter, whoever is cast to play that, would be Batwoman. So, like, confirmed, basically, is Barbara Gordon going to be a woman of color, either Black woman or biracial. Mm-hmm. So, there.
Yay. Mm-hmm.
That's exciting. Plus, there is also a rumor that they would actually have Robin at some point, like Dick Grayson in the in the
and
series.
And that would make sense if they're like building this out to have like Batgirl. If they also have like, you know, Dick Grayson in there somewhere, either introduced through the Batman trilogy or on his own movie or through the Batgirl movie. So that all makes sense. Yeah.
Exactly. Moving into Arrowverse news, we have Batwoman's Ruby Rose had a stunt injury. So she basically, I guess she was doing several stunts, and she had like herniated discs in her neck or something like that, and she had to have emergency neck surgery. So that happened, and that kind of explains why she's been MIA for all the public appearances. Yeah,
that seemed like really weird for like public appearances, why Batwoman was always like canceling stuff and canceling panels and everything. But when you 2020 vision and you see that, you know, the reason probably the reason behind it being her being injured, it does make more sense. Yeah,
it certainly explains what might have happened there.
Not because like, she seems back on the circuit, because she was on like Jimmy Fallon and a couple of other places. So
it wasn't because they were scared. It was because Ruby Rose was injured, apparently.
Exactly. We have a few other Batwoman news. So Rachel Maddow is voicing the character of Vesper Fairchild in Batwoman, who in the comics was a love interest to Bruce Wayne back in the day.
Yep.
And in the Elseworlds crossover last year, someone pointed out to us that she was name dropped as having had a fling with Oliver Queen.
So basically, another thing Oliver stole, Arrow stole from Batman.
Exactly. Oh, Oliver. Gabriel Mann will play Hush, so Dr. Thomas Elliot. Sebastian Roche, who was on The Vampire Diaries and Supernatural, was cast to play a plastic surgeon named Dr. Campbell. And Magpie has also been cast, and Rachel Matthews will play her character. So lots of villains, some plastic surgeon, lots of stuff going on in the Batwoman world. And the premiere is tonight. So we will be shady tweeting that show.
Shady tweeting? What if we're just happy tweeting? What if we're just...
Katie will be like, what happens with the fingers? I'm not sure.
Come on, you know.
Then we, in DCEU news, Birds of Prey trailer was finally released, but really it was the emancipation of one Harley Quinn, because that's all you saw in the trailer.
Right. Yep. That was sad.
It's like, you know how you have like people have like coffee with milk or tea with milk, but then instead of, they say that, but it's actually milk with a touch of coffee or milk with a touch of tea. That's what the Birds of Prey movie is like. It's like Birds of Prey. It's like the touch. It's like Harley Quinn with a touch of Birds of Prey. So, I mean, it looks like a good movie, like, in total. But I wish there were more of the actual Birds of Prey. I feel like I get, I don't know if it was, maybe it was a Harley Quinn fan that was saying, because I think they're praising Margot Robbie for introducing the Birds of Prey through a Harley Quinn film, which maybe it was true. Like, maybe they were trying to do Harley Quinn as a solo flick, and then Margot Robbie wanted to open it up to more women, and that's how the Birds of Prey got involved. But it definitely feels like it should be the fantabulous whatever of Harley Quinn featuring the Birds of Prey.
Exactly. I mean, I don't see why they wouldn't have... Well, I guess we have to wait till we see the movie. Like, it's possible that they're marketing it that way because they think Harley is the one that sells, for whatever reason. I mean, it does obviously sell. It's not a lie. But it's not like people don't know who the Birds of Prey are. But if not, if that's not the case, then I agree. Like, they should have just called it The Emancipation of Harley Quinn and just happened to introduce the Birds of Prey in that, in anticipation of a Birds of Prey specific movie.
Right.
But oh well.
Yeah. I was mainly frustrated because the trailer has, maybe I saw Rosie Perez once. You can't really tell Jurnee Smollett is like in the movie at all.
I think she's the most like
featured. She does, but like she doesn't talk, like she has maybe one line.
Right.
The whole time.
I was like, I can't tell I was like, I can't tell anyone else in the movie other than Jurnee Smollett. And then I was like, and I can't tell what her personality is other than she looks like she's a punk rock singer, you know?
I just think they could have wasted less time on whoever that guy was in the trailer and focused like a little bit more on the other women.
Is that guy Ewan McGregor? Because that's all I remember. Oh, Ewan McGregor.
Yeah, it probably was. I didn't really care for him. I was like, I don't know who you're even playing, so it doesn't matter.
I also don't know who he's playing.
But speaking of Harley Quinn, the animated series on DC Universe finally gets a release date. So that'll be nice November 29. Yes. In Arrow news, there's Colton Haynes has been confirmed to return. There was a little bit of shadiness over the summer. Yes. That he had not been called back, or he had been dropped from being a regular from last season. And I just assumed he was just going to go back to being a recurring, but it's been confirmed that he will appear in season 8, just not as a series regular character. And then Lila Michaels. On Arrow is finally living up to her namesake and is going to be Harbinger on Crisis.
Yeah, like a week ago. Jess was like, why are you having a meltdown over Harbinger?
Yeah, like Tati was like having a meltdown when they were like releasing all this news about Superman or whatever. And Tati was like, what about Lila Michaels? Like, why are you like Lila Defense Squad right now?
And she was like, Oliver's obviously going to take the role of Harbinger. And I was like,
that's how they set it up.
Everybody is actually that.
Anyway.
But thank you. Of course, finally living up to her name.
Yes. And of course, we don't necessarily know that she will do what she does in the comic. Because, first of all, nothing can really be like it was in the comic, since that would be horrible. But horrible for us in the TV universe, not that the comic is horrible. You know what I'm saying? But yes. She will be a different Harbinger than the one she already is, because I always forget her code name is Harbinger and has been Harbinger since season 1, but obviously that's not in any way related. That's not in any way related to Harbinger from Crisis.
Yeah, it was just like a nod to her name, but it's like, oh, okay, we're not really going there. But now they are, so we shall see how that pans out.
I wonder, like, how planned this was, because of course, according to Mark Guggenheim, he's planned this for like 10 years. I'm like, doubts
like
that.
LOL.
I don't think he did. So
yeah, and exactly I don't even know why that's like. Why do you need to prove that? You know, like wow, like planning something for 10 years doesn't make it better. It's just
I feel like they decided when they broke Flash, it's like, oh yeah, this is what we're gonna do, and that's when they really decided to go all in, but not to this degree, maybe. So who knows?
I doubt he was thinking about Lila Michaels.
Not for her, but for the general story, But he'll say all this to probably get attention, but whatever.
Whatever.
Anyway, moving into our feedback, we have lots of feedback this week. So start with Swara. Hello, Swara. Thank you for emailing us. It's been so long.
We missed you, Swara.
He says, hope you've all had a very good week. So we've been getting a lot more marketing for the Birds of Prey film. Generally, I've been very excited about it due to the women of color starring in it and Kathy Yan, also a woman of color, writing it. But the marketing would make it seem they're non-existent in this film. It's almost nothing but Harley. No Black Canary, no Renee Montoya, no Cassandra Cain, and no Ali Wong's character. Oh, yeah, I forgot she was in the movie. I guess. He says, don't get me wrong. I love Harley Quinn, but I'm sick of seeing only her on the posters. There was one poster that did have the characters with Harley, but they were literally portrayed as small birds next to Harley dominating the whole poster.
And so Harley was also a bird, so it's like extra.
Yeah.
Extra
yeah. Harley. Yeah. I mean, it was really pretty, but that's it. And he says he's fairly sick of this, and I'm tired of studios refusing to market their women of color proudly. Funnily enough, something similar is happening with Star Wars marketing, where Kelly Marie Tran's character Rose Tico, even though she is in the film, is virtually absent from the marketing. This recently sparked the Where's Rose hashtag on Twitter. Soon after that, a Where's Finn tag arose as well. Though he's seen it far less. And I know that the main conflict has to do with Rey and Kylo, but there should be marketing for the characters of color too. So why do we think that the studios are reticent to proudly promote their diverse characters? Even when they make strides behind and in front of the screen, studios just don't seem proud of their progress. So what do we think about that? I think we discussed a little bit earlier about the Birds of Prey, but like in general.
Yeah, I totally agree.
It's diversity cookies. It's diversity cookies. You have like diverse characters who say that we're cool, we're hip, we don't see color, we hire everybody, but really it's like the same old Hollywood machine that, you know, you promote the white people because that's what you think sells, no matter if, you know, hard cold cash and viewer statistics tell you otherwise. So
right. That actually reminds me of, did you guys hear the like from Bob Iger's memoirs about Kevin Feige versus the Marvel executive that was clearly Ike Perlmutter.
I heard inklings of it, yes.
But basically, Kevin Feige wanted to do Black Panther, like, right after, I don't know, it was like 2014 or whenever it was. He wanted to do Black Panther, like, soon after Avengers. And the Marvel executive was like, no, because Black people don't sell well internationally, and, like, we don't have any star that can carry it, and bullshit, 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 right? And that's when Kevin Feige was like, either you get rid of him or you get rid of me. Like, I will not stay with Marvel if I have to work under unnamed Marvel executive named Ike Perlmutter. And so that is when Bob Iger, Disney CEO, separated Marvel Studios from Marvel Entertainment, which allowed Kevin Feige to have creative control of the Marvel movies, and that is when Black Panther and Captain Marvel went into production. So I was like, that is what we... You know, you have to have people that are willing to actually stand up and not only, you know.
Yeah, I just think white people are in denial. Like, they see the numbers. They see the numbers. It's like, it's right in front of you. Obviously, there are statistics to back this up. And then they start making up all these myths about how they don't have a big enough star to sell, which in this day and age, there are rarely those big stars that carry an entire movie that will sell
you billions of dollars. Like a white person from obscurity. And turn them into a star overnight. Yeah. But you can't
they
do
did
the
that
same.
With Chris Hemsworth and what's his face? Tom Hiddleston with
and what's her face?
Them.
Like Jennifer, whatever, Hunger Games.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Jennifer Lawrence.
Lawrence, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's like, good. Like, I remember Ridley Scott for, I think it was Gods of War, some movie that was.
Oh my God, yeah. And he was like,
yes, he's like, I can't hire Muhammad so-and-so because those names, Arab names, don't sell. And I'm just like, dude, you have a bunch of unnamed white
they
people in your
sell home. If you make it, like, a good movie. Then they will
exactly.
Sell.
It's not about, it's not always about just the stars anymore. Like, this is not 1995, you know?
Age-old job hunting thing where it's like, we want people in this entry-level job to have experience. And you're like, how do I get experience if you don't give me a job?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's exactly right. So I hope we answered your question, Sora. Basically, they basically want cookie points, the brownie points for what they're doing, but they don't actually want to throw themselves into the water. They want to dip their toes and make it look like they're doing something right.
If there's a hint of this isn't going well, or this character is being, you know, is not the favorite, then they can be like, oh no, we will not focus on this character. When actually they should focus more on that character, because the reason why they're getting hatred is because they're POC.
Exactly.
All right, speaking of Birds of Prey, Shang also sent us some feedback about the teaser. He caught all the Easter eggs. I'm so glad they are doing the hyena for Harley Quinn, although it's one and not two. I have seen the general public not being too happy about the teaser because it felt as though it was Harley Quinn and her side chicks kind of movie. I'm kind of on the fence about it. I do think the Birds of Prey will get their spotlight, maybe in the other trailer in the movie itself, but I do wish to continue thinking Margot Robbie is a decent egg white lady. From an advertising perspective, he gets it, because Margot is super famous in her own right, and we already know who Harley Quinn is, hence people would be more inclined to go see it. I feel we should wait for maybe another teaser or even the movie before thinking that the women of color are just there to prop up a lady clown.
So basically, Shang, like he through his mind read email. Telepathy. That's the word I was looking for.
Yes. He's like, counterpoint. Yes. I mean,
but he does think
of it. How, sorry?
Go ahead.
I was just like we already said, I do think it's possible that we will see more of them, you know, in the actual movie or in later marketing. But in that case, there's no reason why they couldn't have just said in the first place, it's a Harley Quinn movie, and also there are Birds of Prey. Because then it would be a nice surprise when the Birds of Prey actually end up being the main story, as opposed to a horrible sinking feeling through the entire lead up to the film.
Yeah, for sure. But he does think the visuals are stunning. He's most excited for Cassandra Cain. Also, I sure hope they are keeping the canary cry for the movie as a surprise. And he's hoping to get an Arrowverse prediction podcast this week. You're in luck. For as much as any predictions that we have, we will give them to you. But I don't think they're going to last very long, but they're there. He's just crossing his fingers for Lena, that Lena confronts Kara about being Supergirl in real life and not on the VR system, because I will pull all my hair out.
Well, I think I feel sorry for your precious hair.
Next up is Paulina, who sent us a very long email about, oh, she says, happy belated birthday, Tatiana.
Oh, thank you.
She says she knows that this week's podcast is predictions for the CW-verse shows, which return next week. But I've had an awful cold this week, and I'm feeling particularly weak and tired. So, unfortunately, I'm not in the headspace to formulate my own predictions. Oh, we hope you feel better, Paulina. But she's excited to hear all of ours. She thinks the Flash promo team finally decided to show up and release an extended trailer like 5 days before the premiere airs, but better late than never. It was an excellent trailer. I think it's right on par with the Black Lightning extended trailer, which is saying a lot. I liked how the voiceovers were mostly Barry and Iris, and I liked the emphasis on Iris and Joe, particularly in relation to what gives Barry strength and whom he loves. Let me just say that I could literally hear Candace's amazing acting voices, Iris's voiceovers. So yeah, I'm excited to see her bring it as she always does. You will be very excited. Yes. There's that West Allen scene where Barry is lying on the couch crying, and Iris is bent over him also crying. And let's just say I probably will be an emotional wreck after that. I'm bringing tissues. Let's just say that. Let's see. Eric's interview with Entertainment Weekly had a lot of gems, and I look forward to seeing all of it. Eric wanting to address the fact that Barry and Iris are an interracial couple is music to my ears. Yes. That's an amazing thing. And I love that he wants to do in subtle ways, such as through the music they listen to together in their apartment or in relation to the food that they eat. I also love that we're going to see Iris and Cisco bonding, because Iris and Cisco are such an underrated duo. That is very true. And I think that that's an amazing thing, because we haven't gotten them for so long, and fans are just ready to dig into all of that.
Yeah.
Then in Black Lightning related news, she says the synopsis for 3-3 was released and Thunder Grace stands make some noise because Grace and Anissa are going to be reunited and have an emotional encounter. Woohoo! Woo! Finally. We always hope for the best for them.
That's because gonna be the
we
last
never know.
Episode in an episode.
Yeah. But Paulina's very excited about this, but I hope that it means that we'll see consistent development for Grace and Anissa, although I'm not holding my breath. Same.
Do not hold your breath. You will die.
Yeah. Now on to Titans. Compared to last week's episode, this week's episode was a much needed reinvigoration. For one, Corey was back on our screens, which elevates an episode automatically. I agree with this. I loved everything Corey related, especially her conversation with Donna, where she informs Donna that she's next in line to be Queen of Tamarind. I love their relationship, and I'm so glad we're getting to see it flourish a bit this season. I also collected my Dick Corey crumbs, where Dick told Corey that he liked her hair, which is his signature Corey heart eyes. I did really enjoy Dick and Corey fighting Deathstroke. It was great seeing Corey demonstrate more of her abilities in battle. And then she finally enjoyed Jason taunting Dr. Light at the beginning of the episode, because that is so in character for my angry, ridiculous son. Thank you, Paulina, and we will post all of this feedback because there's much more over on Tumblr. Finally, we have Celeste back with her feedback. Hello, ladies. Hope you're all doing well. First, gotta say that the Flash extended trailer is low-key making me nervously excited for season 6. It looks very emotional and even though my expectations aren't high after season 5, I still think this season will be great. I did want to talk about how awesome it was that Eric said he's trying to bring in subtle ways to remind show the audience that the heart of the show is in fact an interracial couple and that Barry did grow up in a Black family. Amazing. Mm-hmm. It's been one of my biggest issues with the show throughout the years, so I'm happy it's finally being addressed and Eric is finally changing things for the better.
No more Grandma Esther's noodles.
We have
If it was spaghetti, like spaghetti is a noodle. If it was Grandma Esther's spaghetti, then I would get it. But like noodle,
right?
Just, no.
Camilla even asks if there'll be mac and cheese. So there you go.
I love mac and cheese.
For Titans, she says her favorite parts of the episode was definitely anything Corey related. I loved how she was there for Rachel and gave her advice. Their pseudo mother-daughter bond is just so sweet. The way Dick's face dropped when he saw Corey made me laugh a little bit, but I did like their scenes throughout the last half of the episode. She did love the majority of the episode. The only thing that really fell flat for me was probably Dr. Light's death. She was just like, oh, he's dead. Well, okay.
Right.
It felt really anticlimactic.
I don't think it was supposed to be particularly, like, you know, moving or emotional. Yeah.
Dick saying he would have liked it if she stayed was adorable, and his little flirty comment about her hair was nice. I miss them interacting so much, but I'm glad they're back. Corey popping in at the last fight scene actually surprised me, and them fighting together was really well done. And lastly, she wonders what the hell is going on with Rose and that cliffhanger. So she can't wait for our thoughts, and the rest of your feedback will be on our Tumblr as well. Celeste, thank you so much. And now getting into the main core of the episode, we have our predictions for the Arrowverse, except for Legends of Tomorrow, which won't be back until January, for side A, and then side B, what the fuck is happening with Titans. And then, of course, we'll crown our Lady with Gumption of the Week. And to take it away,
it's Corey.
Jessica will be our wonderful host.
Yay! So let's get into it. On side A, we have the predictions for the shows coming back this week. Tonight, Supergirl. So starting off with her, season 4 recap, basically Ben Lockwood represents like American neo-Nazis pretty much, but also a little bit of Trump, because he winds up being a puppet for Russia. I mean, you know, Lex Luthor's kind of like puppet. So he's a little bit of, you know, both. He spikes the anti-alien resentment and discriminatory legislation, while Lex raises a Kara clone in Cosnia and teaches her to hate/attack the U.S. president and cabinet in order to make the country think that Supergirl herself is a hater. meanwhile, James takes Ben Lockwood down, and the man goes to prison with his own son hating him. And this is after James takes a detour into I don't see color, police lives matter, all lives matter. And, you know, thinking that the children of liberty aren't all bad. So this is after he regained his senses. He takes Ben Lockwood down, and Ben Lockwood goes to prison, and his own son winds up hating him. Linda realizes, who is Linda?
Isn't Linda Lee? Linda Lee is Cat Red Dog.
Yeah.
we needed this episode just as much as everybody else.
I did not write my own recap.
She's like, what the fuck is this?
Cassie and Supergirl realizes that Lex Luthor is just like an asshole. Like, too late, but she realizes it, and she dies trying to stop him, but it's okay, because then Lex dies at Lena's hands right after revealing that Kara's been lying to her this whole time, that Kara's the lying liar that lies, and that she's actually Supergirl. Now the most secret. Speaking of Lena, she and James also break up because, you know, whatever.
Undisclosed reasons.
Drama in your TV screens. But then James has like a near-death experience, and she has to inject him with like whatever. Got it.
Super secret soldier serum.
I just struggle. The struggle is real.
Ben, okay, yeah, you guys was like super serum, make you into a super soldier or whatever. That was what she got, because she was experimenting on the Haren L. Mm-hmm. And then Ben Lockwood finds out about this. He's like, yeah, I hate aliens, but I also want to be one. And so he takes it himself, and he becomes crazy. And then also,
which brings truth to that old adage that haters are just jealous.
True. Also, James's sister, Kelly Olsen, gets introduced into town when he almost dies, and she's too busy flirting with Alex. Then Alex is like, I have a lot of issues going on in my life, and I also need a therapist. And what do you know? Kelly is also a therapist. So she talks to Kelly about all of her dreams of wanting to be a mother and how that didn't work out for her. And so she and Kelly bond over Alex's journey to adoption and motherhood and the hardship she goes through with that. Meanwhile, we get introduced to Neonol, who is interested in Brainy, and they have a off and on kind of getting closer, getting further apart. I want to date you, but now I want to train you and all this kind of stuff. And it ends in he gets rebooted and he's a little crazy, but then power of love compels him to save Nia and John. John's an afterthought, but really Nia. now they are like swearing together. And then finally, John has this whole journey of trying to be a peaceful man and not be the Manhunter and rejecting his Manhunter side. And that doesn't really work out so well. So then he goes like full Manhunter. And then like it's a, which leads him to kill Manchester Black. But then it's okay because, well, I don't know if it's okay, but like at the end, the monitor brings in his brother and or his like evil twin or whatever. And now we have like two John Johns in the world. So we'll see like what happens there. So that's what you missed on Supergirl last season.
Clearly, we missed Manchester Black. He should not have died.
He wanted to die, though. He was like, kill me, bitch.
Yeah.
He got what he wanted.
Yeah. So what we know so far about the new season is that Kara and Lena's friendship is will definitely be a driver of the season. But there will be a lot of tension there because Lena obviously knows Kara's secret, but Kara doesn't know that Lena knows her secret. And then this season is inspired by Black Mirror, so there's a lot of technology going on. We know that Kara will be fighting to get people's attention for good and away from technology. James is leaving, so we know that for sure. We don't know how he's leaving, if whether it'll be by coffin or by choice. Kelly will do more work as a psychologist, but her character will also get some more development. We know Nia and Brainy will be working on their relationship, but their modes of communication are different, and that Brainy is kind of special in like his way of viewing the relationship or romance in general. We have new characters. Julia Gonzalo is Andrea Rojas, who is playing
Akrata.
Yeah, Akrata, who is a Mexican heritage character, but they've teased that they're doing their own spin on it, which hopefully means that they're going to spin it in a way that connects with Mexican. Her. Yeah, that's not Mexican. that connects to her actually being Argentinian or something like that. We don't know. So we'll look forward to that. We also have Megan Rath, who is Jesse Rath's sister, who's going to be the female Brainiac. So that's exciting. And then Staz Nair, who is a new reporter at CatCo, who is a man in the proximity of Kara and White. So we'll see how that goes.
I thought the sentence was going to stop there. I was like, yes, he is a man.
Predictions on this season.
Well, we already know that it's going to be, like, really centered on the Kara and Lena dynamic. So I'm just going to predict that the power of love will bring them back together.
The two ancient aliens that are, like, protect the Earth from the faults of humanity are introduced as well. So,
which that'll be interesting. Maybe we'll have a bit of the, like, reverse of season 4, which is like aliens are bad and we must destroy them, and then in season 5 you have aliens being like humans are clearly the bad ones, we have to, you know, protect them from themselves or whatever. But yeah, and I'm trying to think like what else, like everything that I'm expecting is like I expect that Alex and Kelly will finally Alex will get a child by the end of this season. It's gonna happen every season since last season. But, or wait, no, was it since, no, it's been since season 3 that I've been like, she's going to get this child. This child will be Alex's child. So it's been, because first I thought it was going to be Ruby.
Yeah.
Like, oh, Sam will die for Alex to have a child. But yes, so I do think this time they will make it happen, like by the end of the season. Yeah.
Okay. Predict not really predictions because you know I suck at that, but in general I think that the issues with communication between Brainy and Nia, I don't trust these writers, and I feel like they're gonna make that a reason for them to hit some bumpy roads and maybe eventually take a break. I don't know, just because it doesn't, I mean they could fix it, but we'll see how that plays out. I am worried about them.
I don't think it feels sustainable the way that there's, like, I feel like they keep playing it for laughs. So the fact that, you know, they have troubles with communication is mainly because, well, I don't know if it's mainly because, but one of the things that they hint on is that Brainy is so off in the way that he views romance, or it's like the, you know, hijinks kind of thing where, oh, silly robot boy doesn't understand romance kind of thing. And so I feel like they're still playing the relationship for a laugh as opposed to something that is like meaningful for one or both of the characters. And then there's still that whole thing about Nia's descendant in the future and how Nira can't be if she falls in love with Brainy. So I think that will kind of also drive like a wedge between the two.
Yeah, so they're going down like a Nate Amaya route.
Basically.
Is that what it is? Are we thinking that Nora's impacted by, like, her existence is impacted by Brainy and Nia?
I think that Nia will be the one to break it off with Brainy if and when it happens because of Nira.
Okay. Okay. We shall see. We shall see.
Yeah. But I do think sorry, go ahead.
We know that this is, I have a crisis thought, so we can wait until Supergirl specific thoughts and then Supergirl leading to crisis. So, go back.
What's his face? John Cryer will be back as Lex, even though he died last season. But I don't necessarily think that his role is just going to be limited to crisis. I think that he's going to show up previously to that, and maybe it could connect to like the whole Leviathan thing. Because I don't know what their deal is.
That's another thing, because that was a big kind of cliffhanger at the end, in addition to John's brother. Old lady Eve is sitting at a bus stop, and she's reporting to this old lady who is representative of Leviathan. We know that Eve is going to be back for like a series, like regular.
Yeah.
And that something unexpected is happening in her storyline, which I think is going to incorporate her pregnancy. Like, the actress's pregnancy, but we don't know.
Oh, like it's Lex's baby?
Yes, Lex's baby.
Oh, my God. It's
like that crazy to do that.
That could be the baby, the Lex baby.
That could be Alexander. Exactly. That could be instead of Lois and Lex's baby. Yeah. It could be Tess and Lex's baby. Oh, my God.
Yay.
Okay, so that's one crisis theory. I do think that, like, obviously we have Tess, but Tess can't operate freely with the people, the characters of the show. Like, they already know that she's already been burned, quote unquote.
Right.
So I would
her Tess.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. Her name is not fucking Tess. Eve. Okay. Eve. I always call her Tess. Her name is just Tess. Okay. Her name is Tess now. I renamed her. No, but okay. So Eve's already been burned by the rest of the characters. They already know that she's, you know, bad news. So I would imagine that one of the new people at Catco is connected to Leviathan. So we can have a new deception, disgrace. But speaking of Lex, didn't we already confirm that the Anti-Monitor is also played by LaMonica Garrett?
Yeah.
So could the one that took Lex be the Anti-Monitor and not the Monitor?
Interesting.
Because I was thinking, like, maybe it was the Anti-Monitor who took Lex, because you know how Crisis, it's like in the last act, when it's like things are good, then suddenly Lex and his goons come out and they're like, ha, villains taking over the Earth. Mm-hmm. So maybe the Anti-Monitor is like, hey guys, ready to take over the Earth? Kind of like he does with Psycho Pirate, right? So go, be free, take over the Earth. Or whatever. Just because I don't know why the Monitor would save Lex, unless
he was like one of those, like, I don't really care if you're good or bad, I just care what the result is.
Well, that's true. Like, yeah, it could just be like, fight for this. If you want to keep being alive, then you have to stop the Anti-Monitor. So clearly you will do this.
Yeah.
Sure, that's also possible. So that's the end. That's the end of my thoughts, I think. Done now.
Cool.
And see.
So let's move it on into Arrow then. So this is going to be the final season of Arrow. So going back quickly over season 7, basically Oliver chilled in prison and met ghosts of his vigilante past for a while Felicity had to go one-on-one and then run from Diaz. And she kind of came into her own, and Oliver was like, this is not the Felicity that I imagined in my head to be. And she's like, I kind of think I was. So, yeah. But then they kind of get back on the same page. And then meanwhile, Diggle's job with Argus, because he has been fired from being a vigilante, proves to be an obstacle at times, even with his wife. But eventually he kind of gets back on the same page with Lila. Like, he had a minute where he lost his mind and went against her and also, like, all of his own kind of morals, and was kind of questionable for a minute there. But then he kind of regained his composure. So that was cool. Curtis also worked for Argus for a bit before he realized that everyone is fucking crazy and he would rather be a tech genius making stable money in DC away from everybody else, and walked off the show. Also, let's see, Dinah, when she quit being a vigilante, she went full force in being police captain. That also put her against, at times, her friends. But once Oliver is out of prison, thanks to Laurel being a lawyer, a fake lawyer, but, you know, actually doing
good at faking it.
Laurel gets a deal to get Oliver out of prison and make vigilantes legal members of the police force. And Dinah's like, cool, now I can be both. Until Roy's dumbass decides to come back into town and kill some guards thanks to his bloodlust, because, surprise, surprise, he almost died and got resurrected through a Lazarus pit. And so now that's the thing again. And they cover it up. The Arrow team covers it up. And they get their asses fired from the police force, turned back into vigilantes. So, yeah. Thank you, Roy.
Snaps for Roy.
Snaps for Roy. Two for you, Roy. Also, in this season, we had the introduction to Oliver's sister, Emiko, who shows up and she's vigilanting around as fake Green Arrow for a while, and forms a pseudo relationship with Ray, like as Renee as her sidekick, only to turn out to be plotting against Oliver because his dad was shitty and left her and her mom all alone. Although I really think her relationship with Oliver, not Oliver, with Renee was true. She still ended up betraying him in the end. She brings the Ninth Circle with her, and apparently she is the leader of the Ninth Circle, even though she joined the Ninth Circle way before, like when she was like 10 or whatever. And the leader of the Ninth Circle turned out to be her minion or whatever. It was really weird. Anywho, she's really mad at Oliver. She wants to kill Oliver. Until she doesn't want to kill Oliver. They fight each other until they start loving each other again. And now she wants to help Oliver. But it's too late, because the Ninth Circle decides that they don't want to be boring anymore. And they kill her. Because that is how things work. When you want to do good things, you die.
Yes.
And they cop out so that they wouldn't turn Oliver back into a murderer or whatever. So.
Oh, right. Yeah, exactly. They're like, she has to die, but he can't kill her.
You have to save Oliver at all costs, basically.
Yes.
Over in Felicity World, Felicity and Oliver send William to his grandparents because they are tired of taking care of the child. Just trying to Felicity get pregnant so they can have a child up there. Then never speak to William again, and that's why he's so pissed in the future, because they never call him ever again. Only to find out that he has a sister. His sister is Mia Smoke, who, at the age of 18, living 18 blissful years of being in a suburban, like, wooded place where the strangest thing she had to do was martial arts, suddenly hates her mother, has been on the street since she was, like, 8 years old, and is, like, full of, like, false bravado and all this other shit.
This is her favorite character, as you can see.
So she's like Fight Club ready at all times. And her pseudo boyfriend is, you know, Connor Hawk, who is taken in by Diggle after Bronze Tiger, whose name is, I can't remember, dies somehow. Diggle stops Connor. And Connor falls in love with Mia, and Connor's brother, John Jr., becomes the new something. What did he become?
He became the leader of some.
Yeah, he's a leader group? Of some other sect, yeah. Right. We were really good at this. John Diggle Jr. I'm gonna look it up.
John hates Connor and wants to kill Connor, so there's something going on there.
He is. He's the leader of the Deathstroke gang.
Yes.
Oh, there you go.
Good for my memory. Hooray. Renee is the mayor in 2040, and he also has turned his back on Star City. Felicity is presumed dead, but she's not actually dead, and they find her, and she is trying to do, like, a double spy agent thing and blow up the government from the inside. There's a Canary Network with Dinah and Zoe and Laurel, and then, yeah. Stuff happens. Stuff is blown up. The monitor arrives at the end and takes Felicity into the afterlife, and he also goes to Oliver right after his child is born and says, I need you to come work for me, and then die. And Oliver's like, sure, I'll do that. And that is like missed on Arrow.
Yeah. I can't believe you did not say that the monitor takes Felicity to the deluxe apartment in the sky with post-crisis Oliver, but that's fine.
But yes. So, what do we know so far about this final season of Arrow? We know that Team Arrow will be on a mission for the Monitor, and Oliver will be joined by Diggle and E2 Laurel. So this is the new OTA. Mia will have to learn how to be a team player because she never had to do that growing up in suburbia for 18 years of her life. She's always been her own. And then live up to her promise to her mom to protect her older brother, William. Then
that's funny to me.
Right. Here, baby girl, protect your older brother. Basically, everybody in Oliver's past is back. We have his mom. We have Merlin. We have Tommy. We have Thea Queen. We have flashback cast from Hong Kong. We have Shadow's dad. We have Roy now again. So everybody is coming back for the season finale, or the series finale, final season, except Felicity. So what do we predict about this?
Did we ever hear back? I don't think we ever heard back on what happened to the Longbow Hunters. So I guess they're out.
Probably.
I would like to predict that they'll be back, but I would be lying to myself. So I think that my biggest prediction also has to do with Crisis in terms of Oliver and what he's doing. So I think that his mission is to, I don't know, part of it is a personal thing where he has to like go back and revisit parts of his own life, because that's the only way I can make sense of why he's going back to like several moments of people who are no longer alive and things that have happened in the past. So I feel like he's revisiting those particular moments for whatever reason.
This is your life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or it's like, cause the world is ending at all points, right? At all times. Mm. So maybe, I don't know, something.
So he can do that.
Yeah. Something about this. I don't know. Or it's other Earths, like family members from other Earths. I don't know.
Yeah.
Sorry. Continue.
That's like my biggest prediction. I know Tati will hate me for this, but I do think that they bring back Thea to kill her off in the crisis, because that would explain why she's not around in the future with Roy or whatever.
But both queen siblings just dying in the crisis. Yeah,
hate Roy.
She could. I would hate Roy.
That's also true. That is also very true. Possible. But I guess they'd have to allow that to play out properly over the course of the season for it to be believable. I think those are my biggest ones. I don't think Felicity will be back at all. So that's unless they already filmed something for her.
Right, unless they already filmed
it. Yeah. And that's how I think she might appear. But otherwise she's not gonna film anything new. She's out.
No, she is done. She is clocked out.
Yeah. Spinoff show, we were expecting the spinoff show to happen. And now we know that it is happening. I do think that Oliver's pre-crisis, I think I'm just saying Oliver's pre-crisis prep is going to be really interesting, to see that in comparison to what the team that's left behind has to do with Star City. I'm guessing that since we have to assume that it's still going to lead to 2040 that we saw in the flash forwards,
right?
Things are not going to go well for the vigilantes that are still in Star City. That's
one way that you can bring the Ninth Circle and the Longbow Hunters back in if they wanted to do that, because you still have to have, like, that was a thread or whatever that was left hanging because Emiko died because she wouldn't play the game the Ninth Circle wanted to play. So now the Ninth Circle can play their game, and maybe we get to see, like, what that actually is in this season.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think that, like, maybe, you know, like, what, maybe those forces can, like, team up or whatever to sort of, like, deliver the final blow to the vigilantes. Like, and that's probably why it's important to have 2040 still around, so that we can see Diggle, you know, and Dinah and Renee get as close as possible to happy endings, since it can't be happy in the present, right? Things can't go well, right? Because by the time that Mia is 18, vigilantes are hated, Star City is in ruins, so we have to see, like, continue to see the degradation of Star City, and probably the effects of Felicity's, I've already forgotten the name of it, the thing, Archer, yeah. The Archer program.
Archer program.
Yeah. See how the Archer program sort of, like, infiltrates, takes over, destroys the city, so.
Sounds good to me.
Yes, that sounds so fun.
Sexy. anyways, moving along to The Flash. In season 5, we have Iris and Barry's daughter, Nora, who arrives in Central City 2018 from Central City 2049, just in time for Cicada to start wreaking havoc. And depending on which version you believe, first she wanted to save her dad from disappearing in crisis. Then she wanted to solve the Cicada murders because that's the one thing that her father and his long list of shit that he was doing failed to do. And then, like, also Eobard is somewhere in there. So depending on what motivation you believe, all of that happened in season 5. We find out that she's been working with Eobard Thawne fairly early on in the season, but not really. It's kind of convoluted why she's working with him, and whether he is actually good or not so good. Yes. And even though she's working with this, like, hateful asshole, she is somehow, like, she can somehow see how he can be forgiven, but not her mother, who she comes in with a huge grudge and chip on her shoulder off the bat, because Iris in the future puts a chip in her daughter's shoulder to keep her from using her powers. And Nora did not find out about this until very late in her life, right before she decided to run back in time and punish Iris for it prematurely. Yes. So now, Nora is in love with her father, but does not love her mother, who wants her to love her. And it's a whole deal that lasts way too long. In other sides of The Flash, we have Orland Dreyer, who became Cicada because Nora saved her father in the premiere by helping him blow up Thinker's satellite, and all those shards rained down across Central City, causing new metas and new meta technology. One of the victims of that being Orland and his niece Grace is put into a coma. Thanks to the explosion, I believe, and Cicada and Dreyer has been infected with this technology from this fallen satellite, and now he is a meta, and he and his doctor, who is taking care of Grace, or supposed to be taking care of Grace, are cultivating their anti-meta hatred into a thing where she sends him out to kill other metas because being meta is a bad thing. So he's like, you know what? All metas must die, even though I am a meta. So before killing myself, I must kill all the others.
At least he's fair.
Right. Barry tries to teach him that, you know, all metas are people too, but that doesn't really work out so well. And they keep trying to teach him the same thing. And Cicada's like, just let me be a fucking hater in peace, please. But he doesn't really learn his lesson until it's really too late. And his psycho niece comes back from the future, because apparently hate is a learned thing. And even like 20 years into the future, and future Grace is a psychopath who comes back into the past to finish off her uncle's legacy. So that's also a thing that happens. Nora tries to connect to psychopath Grace, but through via baby Grace, baby cycle Grace, and that doesn't work out too well. And it all leads to, you know, the uncle is saved and he's like, hey, guess what? I don't have to be a murderer anymore. And Grace is like, fuck you. I don't want to be a murderer. So she kills him and continues to go after the rest of the gang. And so that becomes a whole mess. And they finally kill her way too late in the game at the end, to the point that we don't even care anymore. Because we're super worried about Eobard and what the fuck he's trying to do. And what he's trying to do is escape from prison. So he manipulates Nora, like we knew he was doing since episode 9, to get out of prison using the cicada dagger. Because if the cicada dagger doesn't exist anymore, then obviously he can use it to get out of prison, which he does. But they stop him anyway in the future, the whole team. And then he's like, okay, but if I die, Nora dies too. She's going to be erased in time. And he's like, but you can save her using the negative speed force, because somewhere in the course of manipulating her, I felt like she's my real daughter. And then like, ooh, that's gross, but I don't want her to die. So use the negative speed force, Nora. And she's like, no, I don't want to. I want to be good for once in my life. And then she disappears. And then like Nora and Barry are super, super sad. And then we cut off there, basically. So next season, oh yeah, also Cisco is finding life after Cynthia hard, but then he meets Camilla, and then he's like, you know what, I also think being a meta is hard, so I wouldn't quit that too. So he quit that too, and now he's human, but he has Camilla.
That was so beautiful.
So yeah, that's what happened in Flash.
But yeah, and know, much like Cicada, he was like, I'm going to get rid of all the meta's powers and right. Then my own.
What we know so far about this season, I'm sorry, guys, my recaps make like no sense.
I am also
that's
sorry.
Because the season also somewhat did not make sense. So
right. yeah. In this new season, we have a ton the stuff that we know, and a lot of it's good for Iris and Iris fans. She's building Central City Citizen. She has new staff members. She's investigating. She's grooming Nora. It is the Iris show. Fanboys hate it, but I love it. It's finally, like, they've been complaining about it being an Iris show for so long. Eric was like, yes. You know what? It's the Iris show. Let's do that.
Yeah. So, it's like an advertisement. Fanboys hate her. The Iris show.
Well, then they keep saying that they're gonna stop watching, and I really just wish they would.
But anyway, on Iris and Friends, we also have Barry is like taking the fact that he's gonna die really, really hard, and he's trying to figure out what he's gonna do about it, but he also has to prepare his team for possibly life without him. We have Caitlin and Killer Frost, who have yet another, meeting of the minds, so to speak, and a new side to their relationship. This side being that Killer Frost wants to take the wheel more often. And so we're supposedly going to get to see a lot more of her. We'll get to see Ralph investigating Sue Dearborn and finding out who she is and where she is and why she isn't where she's supposed to be. So we have that to look forward to. We know that Michelle Williams, Harrison.
Michelle Williams is coming.
Yay! No, just kidding. Michelle Harrison is coming back as Nora, but she's not coming back as Nora. She's coming back as Joan Garrett on Earth 3. And we'll get to see Jay and Joan doing what they do best as a couple. And then we'll also see for Cisco more of his work-life balance, his balancing his relationship with Camilla. We'll also get to see him struggle a bit on whether he made the right choice to take away his powers and live as a human. So, predictions on Flash and what we will see this season.
It's hard. I feel, well, it's weird because it's like, I feel like we know nothing about the season, but at the same time, I feel like we know so much. So of course, and also, I don't know if I have any new thoughts. Like, obviously we're going to see Iris build up Central City Citizen. We've heard that we're going to see a new method of metas, or like a new method of like people. So while I don't, so while I don't know exactly what that is, I don't know. I don't really know how to guess what that would be. I do hope that we'll see more of a sliding scale, because one thing is like, it's always been like all metas are bad except for us. We are the good metas. We will stop all the bad metas. And then every once in a while we meet a good meta and then they will die. Plastic and that one dude from episode 16 whose name I can't even remember, who was going to join the team and was never seen again because then he was dead. Yeah. So I was real upset about that. But anyway, so I'm hoping that we're going to get to see like more people who, even if they aren't metas, like can't control what is happening or like don't necessarily want to do evil, and then like the team like maybe helps them, right? And maybe instead of just like stops them. And also hopefully more interaction between Iris and the people. So then she will have a connection to the people when crisis comes, and then be able to be like, this is Iris West Allen saying this thing. And people be like, oh my God, Iris said this thing. We should probably go hide in our bunkers or whatever.
Bunkers, they do that?
To stop the end of the world, hide in the bunker. I don't know.
They probably do that with the amount of like shit that goes down in Central City. I'm sure they have like insane
to the bunker.
They've invested money in shelters and food.
Exactly. They poor hope, because like again, like people continue to live in Central City, so like obviously, and it's not like a dumpster fire the way that certain other towns are. So one would think that they actually invested in, and they have the Flash who can build that stuff really, real fast, right? So as long as they put up the money for it. Anyway. I'm trying to think, like, what else? What are other predictions? Like, I
look forward to Iris and Cisco bonding, because, like, now that he is Team Civilian. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, he's another person. He can probably, like, relate to Iris more of not being able to help in the way that he used to help. And so I am looking forward to that, because I think that, you know, a lot of the fanboy criticism, or you know, hater criticism in general, is like, oh, she's not a meta, she's not a whatever, she can't do blah blah blah. And
right,
like season what, 3 or 4, it was Harrison Wells who lost his intelligence, his scientific intelligence. And so
season four,
and then we had HR in season 3, we had Harry in season 4, and now we have Cisco in season 6 that is not able to help in the way that he used to be able to help. And so I think it's just like another facet to, you don't have to have powers, you don't have to do like science stuff to be a valuable member of like the team. So
right. I agree with this. I feel like we're not going to see Sue until after Crisis.
No, we're not.
So Rob. What the hell is his name? Ralph? Is clearly the... I was like, what is this man's name? It's clearly, like, the worst private detective on the planet. It's very bad.
Or she's, like, the best Carmen Sandiego ever.
Yeah.
Because I do hope we get, like... to be found.
Yeah. I hope we get, like, periodic updates on, like, where she was last seen, or, like, what she's been up to, or whatever. You know, like, as he saw the other...
I definitely think so, because they had that, like, billboard of him, right? Like, oh, call this number for private investigator Ralph. Or... So I think he's building his own thing.
Yeah.
Which is cool. I don't know that I have any major predictions for the show, other than what we're being told. Obviously, I think that most of it's like crisis predictions.
You may as well get into crisis predictions.
Yeah, because I think the show's obviously on its way toward building that up and getting into like a lot of character stuff, which is fantastic. And I think like Eric's already said that they're leaning into that. So crisis stuff, I guess, I do think that, obviously, we've all said this before, the cliffhanger for the Flash episode 4, the crisis going into hiatus will be Barry disappearing or whatever. Yeah. But then we saw set pics of him talking to Sarah Lance. So Barry and Sarah have a conversation. And the word on the street is like, this is post Oliver's disappearance and Barry's return.
Because they're filming for a Legends episode, which is the last episode of the Crisis crossover, which would obviously mean that Barry is back by the end of the Crisis crossover.
Right.
Yeah.
And we also saw in that interview with Eric that they will be somehow incorporating the Iris 30th century storyline. And while I highly doubt that Iris is actually from the 30th century and was adopted by Joe, et cetera, because we can't add another lifelong lie to Joe West's list.
Yeah.
I do think it means that we will see Iris in the 30th century. Like, our Iris will go to the 30th century.
That's interesting.
Or alternately, the other alternate thing would be that another Earth Iris that we meet in Crisis is from the 30th century.
Yeah.
Or so that Barry and Iris disappear together to the 30th century.
Right.
I was thinking that if they wanted, like, if Eric was going down his wish list of, or like our wish list of stuff that we wanted him to do, and he's like checking off, like, okay, I got her black hair and makeup, I got her journalism story in there, I got her blah, 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 blah. I think that he could also like salvage Francine's story because like season 1-2, like the hiatus between 1 and 2, when we found out that she was coming, we're like, oh my God, what's her story? Why was she gone? Maybe she's like a secret traveler, like a time traveler from the 30th century. Like she came from the 30th century back here. Like, maybe she was chased by like Eobard or chased by like whoever in the 30th century and she came to hide out here. And then, like, whatever, her past caught up with her, and that's why she had to leave, or something like that. And they could still do that story, even with, like, the whole drug addiction thing. Like, what if something happens, and whoever was chasing her from her past showed up, and she happened to get away, but it was, like, post-traumatic stress disorder, and it's not like she can tell Joe, oh, by the way, I'm from the 30th century. And so, like, that is what changes her into her drug addiction. Mm-hmm. Which would salvage that storyline somewhat and make it milder or, like, make more sense than the fact that they just randomly decided to make her mother, like, a drug addict. And then that could also, like, lead into something. Like, maybe something that was chasing her mom and caused her mom to go down this path is back again. You know, that kind of thing. So I feel like that would be, like, my prediction / I'm writing this story and giving it to Eric and telling him to put it on the show.
But... I mean, I think that's a great idea. I think it would be awesome. And then it would also give Iris and Barry a reason to go to the 30th century to meet, like, the rest of Iris's family. Because as far as we know, Wally didn't have, like, it was just him and his mom, right? We didn't gain any other relatives from getting Francine. So that would also explain why no one else exists.
Yeah. And also, then, Eric said that they're breaking the story for when Wally's set to return right now.
Yes. So if they're in the 30th century, while Wally is flashing in the present, you know, like flashing on their behalf, perhaps. and also, like, I don't know, like as you were saying, the finale break, the mid-season finale of the crossover is probably going to be Barry disappearing and or Barry and Kara dying or whatever. You know, and then we have to fix that. So maybe the way that it's fixed is with the third, because like when Iris dies, her parents in the 30th century extract her soul, blah, 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 garbage. So maybe that happens with Barry instead, you know, like maybe her family, you know, is looking at their little fucking Gideon. You know,
and that could also explain why he's with Sarah, because maybe the legends go to the 30th century.
Maybe that's how the legends are brought into the world-ending situation. Although, again, the world is ending at all times, presumably. Yeah. You would assume the world's ending no matter where you are. So something would happen. There'd have to be a reason, like, maybe there's, like, remove you there so that you don't die from this one thing. And now, you know.
We'll see. And we are also going to move on to the next show in the Arrowverse, which is Black Lightning. Black Lightning season 2 recap. Lynn begins. She's monitoring the Greenlight children, She runs into problem with ASA agent Odell and his creepy scientist sidekick, Dr. Jace, who we discover is actually insane. Not kind of, but actually she is insane. And she winds up running away from the ASA. She's actually, like, literally running away from the Markovians, who are in the background of the season that we don't really get to see much. But she ran away with them to the ASA for Agent Odell to kind of rope her into this kind of experience to give her protection. And then when that's not working out, she runs into the arms of Tobias Well and his sometimes girlfriend, sometimes not girlfriend, Cutter, to wake up the four demons of the apocalypse, also known as the whatever's of mayhem. What are they called? Masters of Disaster.
Masters of Disaster.
That is what they are called. So that's what's going on that side. Tobias, when Tobias is not trying to wake up the Masters of Disaster, he is obsessed with Khalil for some weird reason, because I guess Jefferson doesn't want to play with him anymore. So now he needs like a new thing to obsess over, and it's Khalil. So Khalil gets a shit ton of screen time in season two. And when he's not being beaten to a pulp by Tobias, he is trying to get back with Jennifer. Takes some time, but finally Jennifer loses her mind, decides to like run away with him because her family is keeping her in a plastic bubble and not letting her out of the house or go to school or do anything, because she can't control her powers, and she's trying to get her powers under control with the help of her new meta therapist, and creating like mind palaces and stuff. But she does decide to run away with Khalil, and them running away together seemed like a brilliant idea, but somehow it does not work out the way they thought it was going to work out. So they are on the run. The whole family is looking for Jennifer because they actually care about her. And
so sad.
On the villain side, Cutter and Tobias are on the lookout for Khalil. Cutter actually winds up crossing paths with Thunder and Lightning, and the sparks fly there, but not the good kind of sparks because they're trying to kill each other. Eventually, Tobias is able to wake up the Masters of Disaster, and he's able to control them with some kind of like watch dookie that threatens to like blow them up at any point in time if they don't do what he's trying to do. So they're working for him. Markovians try to kill Gamby, but he somehow survives and is like living on a lam for a little bit. And it's all confusion. Jefferson loses his school to a racist and then decides like, you know what? Just like when Amber Geiger got convicted of killing Jonathan Botham, and then her brother was like, you know what? I forgive you. Give me a hug.
Oh, my God.
Jefferson gave this guy a figurative hug. Yeah. News, people.
Wow. Anyway. Yeah, that was dark.
That was a very, like, extravagant metaphor or simile.
Allegory.
It's late. It's very late where I am. But anyway, Jefferson decides to give his school away. And Grace decides to give herself away from Anissa and not tell her what's going on with her. Lala's back. Lala is still crazy. Lala finally figures out that he's the one that's responsible for all of the sins that he's paying for at the moment. And the person that was responsible for bringing him back was the boyfriend of
Lady Eve.
Thank you. And so now he's back in the mix. And now everything is kind of up in the air for Markovia in season 3. And that's where we are now. So all we know so far for season 3 is that the Pierce family is separated. Lynn and Jefferson have agreed, because at the end of season 2, Agent Odell kind of like, I know who y'all are now. Now you will work for me. And so they are at the ASA facility for Meta. So Anissa is and Jennifer are on their own. Anissa will reprise her role as Blackbird and do some more vigilanteing. Khalil is still alive, but we do not know if Khalil knows that he's Khalil yet. And Markovia will finally stop being a pussy and we'll make some moves. So, predictions for season 3.
You've got to believe in the power of love.
Do I?
Yes. That's what I think that you have to do in season 3 of Black Lightning. I do think that Khalil will, you know, remember himself when he sees Jennifer. But yes, I do think he will not know himself until Jennifer will.
I don't think he will remember her, like, automatically.
Well, maybe not automatically, but, you know, the power of love will occur.
Compel him.
Like the power of love will compel him. It'll be, like, take maybe slightly longer than it took Brainy to, you know, reboot his reboot and save Nia. Be, like, 2 more episodes than that. I think that, yeah, I mean, obviously Markovia will be a major threat. And Dr. Jace clearly, I mean, presumably plays a pivotal role in that, right? Because they wanted her for a reason. So will they then, like, force her to use either in the comics / Young Justice, Markovia has already been experimenting with Metis. So will that be the case? Will they, like, is that where she got her experiments to begin with? And they want her to then, like, incorporate, you know, upgrade what she's already done in Markovia with what she's learned in Freeland? Or is this how they're going to try to create their own super soldiers based on what she's been doing in Freeland?
Interesting.
I agree with this. Or I see where you're going with this.
Like, one of these two things.
Yeah. I also think that because we saw Lala die last season, but I don't think he's dead, obviously. No. You know, because he's always popping up like a daisy.
Right.
So I think that he'll be back again this season. And I want to predict that Anissa and Grace will, you know, get their relationship going. But I won't myself up for disappointment.
But I do think that Anissa will find Grace, you know, and will probably help her and people like her this season.
Yeah, I agree with that. What else do I predict? This show is just so surprised. You know, like, I'm always surprised when it comes to certain things. So I don't know a lot about what's going on.
That's okay.
But based on the trailer, it seems like Agent Odell has somehow managed to persuade Jeff and Lynn to stay in the facility or something like that. And obviously he's not telling them the whole truth. And I think that somehow maybe Jeff will, I'm not sure how Tobias will come back into play, but he will. That's all. That's all.
Oh yeah.
I think he's going to team up. Isn't he going to, like, team up with Jefferson against Markovia?
I think they have a common enemy now. So
he's right
in prison for the moment. So he has to get out of prison some kind of way. But there is talk that he and Jefferson will have to team up to take down a person they hate more than each other. So we'll see how that goes. And I also think, like, just in general, not necessarily this season, but in a season, I feel like if Tobias is going to die, it's going to be because Lala killed him. And I feel like that's, like, in the story. For that story to have, like, a complete circle and to end, Lala has to kill Tobias. In my mind, where maybe he thinks he kills Tobias and then Tobias pops back up some kind of other way. I don't know. But I feel like the way that they're setting it up, it's for, like, that misdirect of not Jefferson, but it's actually Lala that kills Tobias. I'm going to stick with that until
I like I'm proven wrong. I mean, yeah, because you again, like, Jefferson can't kill Tobias, right?
Right.
So if Tobias is going to die, it has to be at not Jefferson's hands.
Right.
And it can't be in Jennifer's hands, like it was going to be last season. But I think that you're right, that Lala will finally get that vindicating thing. And also because, like, you don't have to save Lala's soul. He's already dead, right?
Yeah.
Which is, like,
many times over.
Yeah. Yeah.
So moving along to the final DCTV Arrowverse show, the newest show, Batwoman, is premiering tonight. After Supergirl on the CW, we don't have a recap.
Actually, before Supergirl. Supergirl's now at 9.
It's premiering before Supergirl, so you'll be able to watch Supergirl, so watch the bad taste of Batwoman out of your mouth, at least the pilot. We don't really know what's happening because this season, because there wasn't a previous season, so there's no recap. But what we know so far is that it's tragically, tragically bad. The pilot, at least. The pilot. I don't know if the show is bad, but the pilot was pretty struggle city to watch through it. Kate has tension with her dad because her dad was like, you can't be a real agent because you dropped out of West Point and blah, blah, blah. She's like, I'll show you, Dad. And so she's been off on this kind of like self journey of training to show her dad that she can kick ass like all the other people that can also kick ass. And she is brought back because this new Wonderland gang has kidnapped her ex-girlfriend, Sophie. And so she comes back to save Sophie. And that's the thing. She also finds out that her cousin is Batman, and a very awkwardly written, weird kind of way. And she also, we also find out that she has tension with Batman for some unknown reason. And we also find out that she has a connection to the villain, Alice, for a much clearer reason that you'll find out in the pilot. So, yeah.
Also, for all Bruce's security, his password is Alfred, and that
which
makes
is bullshit. That is this. So bullshit. This is how you know that someone that does not read any kind of comics. Yeah, whatever. Yeah. Oh, we also know that, well, it's news because we just said it in the news section, but also you have Batman villain Hush will be part of the season, and some of the other castings that we talked about earlier. It's not a prediction more so than it is a hope that it gets better some kind of way, because if it stays the way that it is now, it's going to be very difficult to watch it every
yeah.
day.
That's my same hope, because I have no prediction.
Mean, according to the Vulture article by Angelica, yeah. Bastian, she watched the first two episodes and she said that it was not better. The second episode was not better.
Well, I mean, it's probably going to take like a couple episodes to get into the groove, but
for sure.
Yeah.
But I do hope with you that it gets better. But I think that one thing that we can predict, I mean, we've already predicted this before, but Hush will have a backstory with Kate. That specifically, mm-hmm. like, even though it probably will also include Bruce, and we may even get, like, baby Bruce flashbacks to the time when, you know, he and Kate were friends. I think that he'll have, like, a specific, like, vendetta against Kate or you know, worship of Kate or whatever.
Yeah, that reminds me, because the new story of when his casting was announced because of the images, but then I think TV Line expanded and said that he would sort of be a threat to her identity in some way.
Yeah. Yeah, so
that falls in line.
All right, so we're gonna move on.
Can you hear our excitement?
Like, moving on. Anyways, another news. We're gonna move on to side B, which is the only new show that we have this week, which is Titans, episode 5. Deathstroke, the recap says that with the team thrown into upheaval, Dick and the others vow to do everything in their power to save Jason Todd's life. Gar's guilt over Jason's kidnapping complicates the mission to save their fellow Titan, while Rachel's dark secret continues to gnaw at her and strike out at others, like, literally. When Deathstroke demands they turn over Rose in exchange for Jason, the moral crisis threatens to tear the team apart from the inside. So, in this episode, which was miles ahead of the previous episode, what sparked joy for you?
This whole episode just made the last episode seem completely incompetent and unnecessary, and it could have focused all on Deathstroke. So I'm happy to say that this episode was much better. Yes. In general, I agree with all of our feedback in that all of Corey's stuff was really, really good. She's back. She was sharing with Donna about how she is next in line to be the queen of Tamaran, and So there's like a little bit of backstory, and I liked her conversation with Rachel about how there's choices in life. Like, you can't just have these powers and be scared of them. Yeah, be scared of them and then just think that that's it for you. Like, you don't have a choice in the matter, and it's just going to take over your body. So I really like that conversation that they had together, even though Rachel comes to the conclusion that she doesn't have a choice. And I really like that she was just very much the level-headed one throughout. As they were having the conversation, Hank is the hothead. Dick's like, I don't know, sort of like what we should do. And she's like, you okay with this, Grayson? Like, what the hell? So she was like very much the voice of reason. And she made all of the sense in the world versus everyone else who's just like running scared. And I guess it has to do with the fact that she doesn't really know what Deathstroke is capable of yet, nor does she share a history with him. So she's like in that area where she doesn't have like a personal connection with him yet. I really liked her scenes with, like, I don't know who set up, I think Paulina was like, the crumbs that we got with Dick Corey, you know, like, he was happy to see her, but then he gave like the reason that he didn't really call her, and I can't remember, I'm drawing a blank on it right now, but
I don't remember that.
Maybe I'm making this up.
Say it again. What part
that he did up? Did he give a reason for why he didn't call her? I feel like I wrote it down. But anyway.
But then someone else provided it. Basically, it was like saying, like, oh, he doesn't want to fail again. That's why he didn't ask anyone.
Yeah.
Because he remembers when we failed, so he doesn't want to bring them into the failure. But that has nothing to do with Corey, because she wasn't there last time. So that literally does not explain Corey.
That's true.
And also, they weren't failing at that point, because he didn't know about Dr. Light or Deathstroke, so.
Yeah.
Right. And he brought the kids, and he was perfectly happy to bring the kids. So what was he like? I can't wait for these kids to die. Like, what?
Yeah. And I did like the fact that Deathstroke just seemed very, like, very much more menacing in this episode. You know, we have Dr. Light. He's an asshole. He doesn't really know what he's doing. He's kind of like a weird caricature type character in a lot of ways. But then Deathstroke goes and kills him, which was kind of unexpected because they had been working together and whatnot. But Deathstroke has no patience. So she's like, yeah, I am the villain of the story, and you will do what I say. And if you don't do it, you are a dead man. So he really seems to like have a plan with, you know, fucking with the Titans team and all that. And anyone who gets in the way of that is just going to be murdered. And I really, I especially like the fight scene at the end between Deathstroke, Dick, and Corey, and how they kind of just played off of each other. And like, one second she's coming in to rescue him, and then the next second he's saving her. And then there's like a lot of tension. We know that Jason's not really going to die, but he falls anyway. So there's like a lot of tension there, which is great to watch, like some suspense. And in general, I just like the vibe of this episode much more. Like, we have moments where the team felt like you understood why they were getting into these agreements versus like the conversations that they had had before, which didn't feel like they were earned. Like, their tension wasn't really earned. I feel like here it was a little bit more logical as to why they were fighting and what they were going to do about Rose. So that created like a more authentic, confrontation between them.
And of course, the fact that we have Corey coming in and being, you know, the literal and figurative light and saying, like, no, you dumbasses, you cannot do this. So yeah, I like that a lot. As you already mentioned, I love the Corey and Rachel relationship. I love that Rachel feels that she's able to talk to Corey about it. And I also even like that she was like, I mean, I just don't want to disappoint Dad, you know? So that's why I haven't told him. I just feel like you already understand me, whereas he's, you know, very sensitive. We have to tiptoe around Dad's feelings. So that also seemed very realistic. I'm not you know, yes, it was definitely better than last week's episode, but I wouldn't say
it's
like
a low bar.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Like, okay, you cleared the lowest possible bar. Good job. But I did like, you know, that Carr felt guilty about going along with Jason's stupid ass mission. So yes, that was good. And I even liked that Rachel was like, well, it is, you should feel guilty. It is your fault. Why did you do this? I didn't like what came after that, but we'll talk about that later. Mm-hmm. Yes. I liked Jason's, yeah, like the way that Jason was with Dr. Light and Deathstroke was, you know, very Jason.
I liked it. I thought, again, like, this is every episode, but we got more of Deathstroke this episode, and I love Sam Morales' performance. I feel like he seems like a real threat. I was, like, actively worried for Jason. You know, I actively can, like, imagine the ultimate showdown between him and the High Titans, you know, looking forward to what that will be like. So, I'm pleased with that. I also, I'm trying to think of not the negatives.
I do want to add, sorry to interrupt you. Yeah, I just remembered. I did like the explanation Corey was giving about her bracelet or the transfiguration.
Yeah,
she could hold her powers. Yeah, that was really great.
Yeah, that was good. It also reminded me of Runaways. It reminded me of, do you know who I'm talking about? Carolina and Runaways, yeah. It's like, oh, hey! And they're both aliens. Like, are y'all from the same planet? But anyway. same but different. Okay. And I did like how we were shown that Rose has the regenerative powers, right? Like, oh my god, she's dead! Nope, just kidding, bitches. She's alive.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah. So I did like that. And I think that in general, Rachel's reactions to her increasing powers make a lot of sense. And like they were realistic and I felt bad for her because of course she's like lived her whole life with this like demonic, you know, thing inside her. And then like finding out that her dad is like the devil and is going to use her to, you know, create the apocalypse. And then she kills her dad, which is like traumatic enough in itself. And now she's like, this is not going away. So it's in me. It's not him. It's me, you know? So I think that makes a lot of sense. Like you said, I love what Corey said to her, but it also makes sense that she's not going to just accept it, right? One pep talk is not enough. So she still has to power through that. Yeah, those are my likes.
Those are some sexy likes.
Thank you.
I like this episode. I wouldn't say that it was like right above the low bar. Like it was a low bar compared to like last week's episode, but I thought it was a pretty solid episode. I wouldn't say that Deathstroke is impatient so much that he just sees the bigger picture. And I feel like Dr. Light was always going to die at some point, and it just happened to be convenient for Deathstroke to kill him at the moment that he did kill him. I feel like it's all, even Deathstroke's death was calculated to a certain extent. And he's just playing like chess when other people are playing checkers. And so like, that's the kind of villain that they're dealing with right now. So I really enjoyed his like unnerving calmness throughout the whole thing, even with Jason taunting him and him being like the opposite of Dr. Light when Jason was dealing with Dr. Light and all that kind of stuff. And so you kind of really see that he's like, you know, before just like in the episodes leading up to it, but in this episode specifically, like he's not like the gimmick kind of villain of the week kind of bad guy. Like he's the actual like long-term player kind of guy. So that was really cool. And I would say this is a like just because I don't really know what's happening between now, like season one, but I feel like I like Hank a lot better in season two, or maybe I just understand him more. I feel like Aqualad, he was the only one that, the only Titan that I liked seeing. And then in this week, it wasn't really a like so much that he was like, zero hesitation, let's throw Rose away to get Jason back. But it was understandable in the sense that, especially like when he was like, talking to John and when he was explaining, you know, about knowing how it felt to be a kid and in need of being rescued and not knowing if anyone was going to come and save you. And the fact that Jason is like alone with this manipulative adult that has him and he has no control and he doesn't know if the Titans are going to save him or anything like that. I can understand how that can cause like a lot of triggers based on Hank's past and his past with his brother and everything that happened to them. And so like in the grand scheme of things of, you know, this moral dilemma of do we sacrifice this one child to get back another, I can understand why Hank would be team like blood over water versus you know, Dick, who's like trying to save everybody. So I definitely felt like I understood. Like, it didn't come out of nowhere. It didn't feel like an asshole Hank move so much as it did, like, I understand why he's doing what he's doing. So I like that in terms of his character development on the show. Obviously, Corey coming back, like, when everyone was, like, bickering, the old Titans were bickering, the baby Titans were, like, spying on the old Titans, and then figured out that it was Rose, and so she got, you know, mad, and then Corey, Gar and Rachel started arguing with each other, and then, like, Corey showed up, and she's like, thank God for Corey. It's like, yes, that is exactly how I feel as well, Rachel. So I really enjoyed their actual talk about, you know, her powers and, like, what May said about her bringing up the Starfire and how powers work on Tamaran and how she's trying to explain it to Rachel and the way she explained it to Rachel so that Rachel didn't feel like she was a freak and this is only happening to her. I like that Corey is able to see things from a different perspective and then also helped with the old Titans and the discussion on whether to save Rachel or not, and the fact that she is this voice, like, she's not connected to Deathstroke, she's not connected to anyone, so she kind of sees it from, like, a broader perspective. I like Dick's reaction to seeing Corey again. He's kind of, like, in awe, a little bit shocked, and then that leads to, like, their one-on-one conversation when it's getting ready to go, and the whole thing about, you know, how he complimented, like, I like your hair now, and the plan to actually save Jason while not sacrificing Rose turned into Dick trying to do what Dick does and sacrifice himself, and Corey actually picking up on that and being like, boy, I know you're not gonna say bye, just like complimenting my hair, that's like a bye.
I forgot that happened. But yeah, yes, I also liked Corey saving Dick from himself.
Yes. I really liked that it was something that Deathstroke wasn't expecting either. Because I always was thinking in the back of my mind, like, she's got to be, like, the factor, the it factor, the whatever factor that he hasn't seen before. And that's how they saved Jason. So I was really, really happy when she came in and she, like, saved him. And then also the way, like, I think, again, what May was saying, with the way they fought together and with her saving him, him saving her, the ending, yeah, everything like that, the whole, like, final part of the episode was, it was set up really nicely to get to next week's episode. So that was great. What else? Yeah, and I still like that even in the midst of all of, like, everything that's going on, like, Corey has her check-in with Rachel, Corey has her check-in with Donna, she has her check-in with Dick, she's, like, checking all of her important people off the list of, I have to check in and make sure these people are okay. So I really enjoyed that we still are getting some Corey and Donna content, and that friendship that was started a little bit in the hiatus of season one that we really didn't get to see, but I'm glad we're getting to see it fleshed out a little more now. And that not only was Corey open to Donna about who she was, but Donna also opened up a little bit about the reasons why the whole Deathstroke thing is so painful, with, you know, the whole Garth of it all, which I wasn't expecting. I don't think I was expecting Donna to open up about that, but it just kind of reiterated, like, how close they've gotten, that they're both kind of really honest with each other. So I like their friendship a lot. And I like that Rose did not have to go back to her dad, and that Rachel and Gar are still there to protect Rose from whatever happened.
Yay! Unless they accidentally kill her out of anger.
Unless they accidentally kill her again, which I do agree with you that I like that. It was kind of, like, creepy and weird. But it also brought out this new mystery to Rose and who exactly they are dealing with. So that was kind of cool. But what did not spark joy for you guys?
A lot of it. So my main issue was with the Rose finding out that she was being traded off, like, no one cares for her. But one of my biggest issues is that since she was eavesdropping on the conversation the whole time, she heard that I think it was Dawn say that we can't do what we did with Jericho, but she doesn't really react to it in the sense that there's like a bit, there was a betrayal there. Like, I can't believe these people actually used my brother. She just runs away because she thinks she's being traded off, but there's no reaction to what they might have done to her brother and how they've been involved with her dad beforehand.
Yes.
So instead of like distrusting them because of it, she just runs away because, oh, they don't really like me. I want them to like me, but that's not the case at all. Like, she has a whole backstory with them apparently that she didn't know about, and she doesn't do anything about it, nor does she confront them about it. She just runs away, and that really didn't sit well with me because it's like the show was ignoring what had happened before that we had seen, and, you know, why she was, because someone had predicted that she was infiltrating them on purpose because she knew that they fucked with her brother, but that's obviously not the case. She's like, an, as far as we know, an innocent bystander in all this.
Unless it's a super long game.
Right. And she's just really good at acting. But yeah, so that didn't really sit well with me. And this is just like an ongoing issue with the show for my next one, is that Gar still doesn't seem like he has much of a story at all. He's just kind of reacting to everything that's happening. He's making sure to take care of Rachel and Jason. He feels guilty about Jason. He's trying to make sure that Rachel isn't mad at him for what had happened, but it just, nothing is about him personally. Like, if he feels bad for Jason, like, they're like, why she Rachel at some point criticizes him for not transforming, or someone said something to him about not transforming
it was Rose, maybe.
She criticized him for like, why aren't you doing anything? Feel like this is where the story should have kicked in about what he's been feeling throughout all of this. But it's just more of like reactions. And also his fight with Rachel, I understood why it happened. It just didn't feel like there was enough build up from before, because they had been getting along and talking about things. So it felt like, not completely out of the blue, but just so immediate that it's like the episode needed them to argue versus like them coming to a place where things have been building up, because he got to her room and he was like scratched by the shadow or whatever. But that was just like one time. And it's not like he had really reacted to her attacking Jason in the previous episode that we saw. So it just felt like there could have been more there on his end prior to their argument. What else? I understand why Dr. Light is dead. I still think that his death was like, his presence, because he died, his presence was kind of a waste. Like, why were you there, really? Like, you're just being an asshole and an idiot the entire time, charging in like a moron, and then he just dies. I think those are like my main issues, and I completely understand where Hank was coming from. Like Jess said, you know, he has a history with these kids and wanting them to protect them and Jason now, but I just feel like they were collectively as a group, they were trying to make a decision that would land them in hot water, just like what almost got them killed last time. And I just think that they need to like step back and research more and take stock of what's really happening before like just rushing in like they were trying to do in this episode.
Yes. What did I not like about this episode? Once again, things that are not in this episode. We are halfway through the season, and we have not met or seen a whiff of Superboy, even though that's what we were led with last season. So I'm like, all right, what is the point of you? Anyway.
He's coming, Poppy. Damn.
Okay, I guess he's coming. Like next you said. Week. Next week. Oh, he's coming next week. That's right. It's called Connor, right? Even though we have no lead up to Connor yet, but that's all right.
Is it another flashback episode?
No,
I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's possible that we'll see a flashback to what happened to him after he got out of the pod. You know, that's possible. But anyway, point is, that's predictions. Okay. So, Dr. Light, like you said, was useless from the beginning. Now he's dead, which makes him even more useless, but all I felt was relief. I just don't care. I don't care that he was useless. He's gone now. Thank you.
Oh, she froze.
Oh, Tati,
Me? He's gone now. Yeah.
Oh, yes. That should have been in my likes. Ding dong. Dr. Life's dead. But oh well. I don't like that. So I said I liked Gar feeling bad about, you know, having gone along with Jason's mission. But like you said, Gar just is reacting. He doesn't get his own story. Rose calls him Tiger Boy, but I don't even know that we've seen him turn into a tiger in front of Rose.
Why does she know that? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I'm sure he has somewhere off screen, but it just reminds me that he hasn't been doing it off screen. And also, I didn't like that how that turned into a fight with Gar and Rachel, where he sort of threw her powers in her face. Like, her losing control of her powers in her face. I was like, I don't think Gar would do that. But then again, what do I know what Gar would do? He has no character. He's barely here. So, I did not like that whole thing. I thought it was a little bit like Rose leaves, Rose comes back, you know, I don't know, the way that it was directed. Like, I liked the moment when Rose's powers come back, but the way that, like, Rachel killing Rose and then like them not reacting to it was directed was like bad. I was just like, what is happening right now? Like, what are their feelings? They're just kind of like, buffering while we wait. Like, they knew she wasn't really dead, and they were just waiting for her to pop back up. I felt like that would be, like, a perfect time for it to, like, break out into a, you know, like, if you were going to have a fight with Gar and Rachel, that would be the moment where he'd be like, your fucking powers are out of control, see, you know?
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then, like, people would be like, well, now, Kate could be like, now we have nothing to trade for Deadshot. Deathstroke, goddammit, I keep saying Deathstroke. You know, like, whatever. Like, have them, like, break into the chaos over this, and then she comes back, and they're like, whoa, wait a second, you know? But no, they're just staring, and then she comes back, and then, whatever. So I was just like, this was not good.
They were in shock.
Clearly, they were in shock. But yeah. Also, another thing that I feel was, like, I was unclear on was Donna and the other people, the others, had a plan. Supposedly, they had this plan against Deathstroke. And then Dick went off script on that plan.
Right.
Right. But I don't know what the fuck the original plan was. So I didn't see it fall through because Dick just went off script. And then Corey came and went off script and saved him from himself and was a surprise. Like, either have the plan be that Corey is going to be the surprise after Dick turns himself in, which is a great plan, or have us see what the plan was that falls through because Dick fucked it up, you know? Instead, it was just like, nothing.
No, but nothing. I have like a thing about that that's going to go in the predictions. I'll save it. But I think I know why they are just standing in the middle of nowhere doing nothing.
Yeah. Okay, okay. So you will, it will.
I will fill in those blanks things for you.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Because I was like, okay, dot. And what else? Dawn blows up at Dick over the thing that happened in the tower, and this just goes back to last week where we had a whole fucking episode about Garth, and then we still didn't even get to the thing that happened in the tower. So was what happened directly related to Jericho? We still don't know. And like you said, Rose hears that and doesn't react to it, which suggests to me that, like, she already knows what happened to Jericho, that you can't possibly be like death, you know? It can't possibly be, like, what led to his death, in which case, what's the point? Or they just did not direct that well, so that Rose hears that and then still does not care, because whatever. So, yeah, that's all. I just think it's, like, also, I feel like kind of ended up in the same place with Jason, right? Like, oh, no. Will Jason die?
Funny. Yeah.
We were here 2 weeks ago.
On Dragon Ball Z.
Exactly.
He's like, I got series regular to hang around. Almost dying in season.
Yeah. Like, we're episode 4 or 5.
Almost die in every episode.
He's like Kenny from South Park. We are 5 episodes into a 13 episode season, I believe. Is that right? 13 episode season?
Yeah.
And we are in the same place that we were three episodes into a 13 episode season, except that this time we don't have Dr. Light, so it's an improvement. So there you go. That's it.
I don't know. I feel like I like this episode more than y'all did. Or I'll just let things slide. I feel like there's a lot of things.
Like, how dare you?
I feel like there's a lot of things.
You're just so thrilled
that
it wasn't last week's episode that you're like, yes.
Yeah. I like Gar. I get, like, I get why y'all are upset about Gar, and I feel like it's accurate in the fact that he just doesn't really have his own story. He's always the sidekick in other people's stories. And especially like this one with Jason and him reacting to Jason is more about Jason than it is about him, I feel like, a little bit. I feel like the thing with Rose, I guess I didn't really, I feel like I heard the name Jericho and I was like, what is she going to do? And then she didn't do anything. But I feel like it could be something that will be like when she wakes up from her mini death coma, she'll be like, what'd y'all say about my brother? Or something like that. I feel like it'll come up later. Like it, she reserved that little nugget of information to like bring it up to Dick later. Like, what did she mean when you said like, when you mentioned Jericho? Or maybe like, because she doesn't know her brother is Jericho. Did Dawn say Jericho or did she say Joey?
She said Jericho.
Rose may not know who Jericho was, but she knows who Joey is, and she didn't, so that may be why, like, she, it was no like recognition there or whatever. So yeah, that's that. It was kind of interesting that when Gar was fighting with Rose, and then he fought with Rachel, but when he was fighting with Rose, and Rose brought up the like you and your little girlfriend, so there is like the whole like Beast Boy Raven girlfriend thing that he's like no, and everyone is actually like yes, but and then they had like that little teen bickering fight kind of thing, which I really don't know why they are trying to go there when they don't really seem to be setting them up very well as friends even from season one into season two. So I'm not really sure if I'm ready for that at any kind of point.
No one is ready for that until season four, when Tegan Croft turns 18.
Right. So that was, I did, like, while I feel like, switching over to the villain side, while I was also very relieved that Dr. Light died, like, he was getting on my nerves to the point where I was glad that Deathstroke shot him. Mm-hmm. But it does kind of feel like, what was the point of him from the past like, couple of episodes if he was just going to die in this kind of manner?
It's going to show you that Deathstroke holds no loyalties, right? He's just out for himself, I guess.
I guess, yeah. But it just kind of felt like you were annoying me for three episodes for no reason if you were just going to kill him. In this episode. I feel like I had one more thing and I just can't remember what it is. So I'm going to go ahead and skip into the prediction section and see if y'all have any predictions before I tell you all of mine.
I love your predictions. I don't have other predictions. I mean, I think... Connor's coming. Connection to Superman. Maybe we'll get a little bit more hint on like Justice League stuff because they mentioned Justice League earlier on, and that Superman and Batman had the fight falling out. I don't know. Somehow, just gonna connect back to that. That's it. That's as far as I've got.
I think that they will talk to Rose next episode at some point, and I'm not sure how she's gonna react, but I think in the long term she's gonna remain on Team Titans.
Yeah,
that's all.
Yeah, unless my
very basic.
Unless the Jericho episode reveals that they were to blame for her for her brother's death, then she will turn the tides.
Right.
Yeah, but I do think that they're trying to trick us into thinking that they actually killed him.
Of course.
But there's something else there.
Right. I'm sure that they wouldn't actually have killed him. That would be crazy.
Right. Okay, so here's what's going to happen next week on Titans. We know that Jason is falling to his death. And the way that they set up the camera shots and everything of that scene with Dick, Corey, and with Jason, we have not seen Corey fly yet. We know Corey can fly. I'm pretty sure that now that she has her memory back, Corey knows that Corey can fly. So I think that Corey is going to fly and save Jason from hurtling to his death. We saw, like, I've seen online, like, some speculation, like, people are thinking because, like, next week is Connor, and someone said that, like, the helicopter that was, like, whooping over the city was probably Cadmus looking for Connor, and so they're like, oh, maybe Connor saves Jason, and that's how they meet them, but that doesn't really make any sense to me from, like, a storytelling point of view. It doesn't really make sense to debut Connor in a way of saving somebody that he doesn't know when he's running away from something else. So Corey saves Jason, but you also have, as you mentioned, Team Titans Beta, who is standing around doing fuck all because they're in the wrong place that they're told to be in. So while they're standing around and the Cadmus helicopter is whooping over the city, I feel like they are the ones that are going to run into Connor. So while Corey is saving Jason, Donna, Hank, and Dawn are going to save Connor from Cadmus. And that's how we're going to get Connor into Titan's Tower. We're going to come up with another kid while they are saving yet a different kid after deciding not to sacrifice a third kid to save the second kid.
I love it. Except that I was punished for not having faith because it just cut out, so I didn't actually hear what you were saying their plan was.
Oh, God. Where did you cut out?
It cut out for me, like, you were like, so, you know, Team Titan, the beta team is doing fuck all because in the wrong place, I think.
Oh, yeah. They're going to save Connor.
And so they're going to have Connor.
Yeah.
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 So they're going to save Connor. He's just, like accidentally, right?
Accidentally. They're going to, well, he's probably literally going to run into them while they're trying to figure out what the fuck is going on with Dick and Corey and where they are with Deathstroke and Jason. Yeah.
I see.
That makes sense.
All right, so this is the end of this episode. We're sorry it's a little bit late. I had some connectivity issues with my Wi-Fi on my, like, business trip or whatever. But we'll be back next week with a full slate of Arrowverse shows and the recaps and the Lady with Gumption of the Week. This week is Corey. There's no really debate. There's no debate. We don't have to debate this shit. So Corey is the Blade of Gumption this week. We'll be back with the full slate of shows next week. So tune in for that. See you. Oh, enjoy Supergirl and
And Batwoman.
Try to struggle through Batwoman.
Enjoy our
You know what? Yeah. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Bye.